You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
There's a saying that baseball is dying in America. I don't know about that, but all I know is that after that Game 5, baseball is alive and well in Canada. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday night. And, of course, we will get to the NHL Jets, the Winnipeg Jets, but we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about that baseball game that just concluded at Rogers Centre. I mean, Shakespearean would be the word that comes to mind. I'm not sure that is a word, but let's go with it.
That's a word.
Yeah. Shakespearean would be the word that comes to mind in describing what we've just seen at Sky Dome in Toronto as the Blue Jays defeat the Texas Rangers by a 6-3 margin, move on to the American League Championship Series. The players have emerged from the clubhouse and are now running up and down the base paths, spraying fans with champagne. I mean, I don't know what these guys are going to do if they win the World Series.
Look at it outside.
But it's absolute chaos outside in Toronto. I mean, the entire country is celebrating. I mean, you haven't seen a scene like this where the entire country can come together, pardon the pun, pardon the hashtag, and band behind one sporting event, but it's absolute chaos.
Since 93.
Since 93. But 93, it was different because there was no social media. And you didn't feel it the same way. I mean, 93 was fantastic, of course. But what a scene in Toronto with the Toronto Blue Jays defeating the Texas Rangers tonight by a 6-3 margin. The protest, the Jays were playing the game under protest. That's a moot point now that Jose Bautista hit the home run, the biggest home run in Toronto Blue Jays history since Joe Carter in 1993.
Yeah, clearly that was a terrible call. I mean, if you want to debate the rule and all that and whether it was intentional that his hands were there, but the fact that the umpire called time when he was halfway down the line, or two-thirds of the way down the line, whatever it was, and they still called it a run. Unbelievable.
Well, Shin-Soo Chu is a veteran. He's been in the majors probably for close to a decade at this point in time. He knew where his bat was. These guys don't keep their bat where they don't know where it is.
I don't know if he planned that. I just know that the home run from Edwin Encarnacion, the emotion of that to then what I think was a terrible call, then to the three errors, which could have been four errors, three of which were by Elvis Andrews, and then the home run by Bautista. And then, you know, them getting mad at him and trash-talking him. Well,
yeah,
come on.
If you don't want him to pose and you don't want him to do the bat flip, get him out.
You heard him with Jerry Howarth and Joe Siddle there, right? Right before we hopped on, that was the motion. I mean, or it was Ken Rosenthal, but on the broadcast.
It was absolutely incredible baseball game today in Toronto, and of course we'll bring you the ALCS. I believe it starts
Friday night. I don't know if it's Friday night. Yeah. I think it's night, though.
I think it would be night because game five of the Dodgers-Mets is tomorrow. So Friday night, the ALCS. We won't have that game for you. The Jets will take priority.
We'll bring you
whatever games we can, I'm sure, here on TSN 1290.
Game two will be Saturday.
Yeah, game two will be Saturday. So that'll probably be, I believe it's, I'm not sure if it's what time the start is because NLCS it will be game one as well. So lots to stay tuned to here on TSN 1290.
What a game.
What a game. What a game indeed.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Another great game. Another Rangers team going down to Tveit.
Yes.
Yesterday, the Winnipeg Jets go into Madison Square Garden at the end of their four-game road trip, the second of two back-to-back games, and defeat the New York Rangers by a 4-1 margin, going 3-1 now on their season-opening four-game road trip. That, you know, it was going to be an okay road trip, regardless of what happened in Brooklyn and what happened in Madison Square Garden. But by beating the Rangers, what you now have is a very good 6 out of 8 points to start the season.
Yeah, it was an excellent road trip. Whenever you get 3 of 4 wins on the road, it's going to be a great road trip. And for me, the key to the game yesterday was the fact that the Jets were taking penalties early in that second period, and Michael Hutchinson kept them in the game. I think the goaltending has been excellent the first four games of the season here for the Jets. And even in the game against the Islanders, Andre Pavlik was excellent. And if Andre Pavlik doesn't keep the Jets in it, then that's not a one-goal game. Yeah. So, you know, you get 6 of 8 points here on the road, and you put yourself in a good position here with six home games coming up, five of which are against playoff teams last year. So it's not going to be against easy teams. But absolutely, I thought the Jets played really well yesterday. Again, Brian Little, who was pointless heading into the game. That shorthanded goal, to me, was the turning point in the game, assisted by Jacob Trouba, another player who hadn't had a point going into the game. So you got to love what you see from the Winnipeg Jets. Again, the start wasn't the best. The Rangers getting the first goal, and really the Jets were a little bit sluggish. So the first four games, you haven't really liked the starts, but you have to like the way the goaltending has been, and you have to like the fact that the Jets are scoring and not just relying on one line. Again, I think the Mark Scheifele line has been the best line. But again, Brian Little and that first line, if you want to call it that, was really good.
I agree with Ezzy off the top there, especially. I mean, I only saw the first period of last night's game, so I can't comment on second and third. I mean, I saw the highlights, of course. But Ezzy started off there, and I think he's absolutely right. The goaltending has just been terrific. And they split Pavlik and Hutchinson. They're both fresh. They've both been great. And, I mean, do you really find any flaws in the way that they've played so far? And I think that's where it starts. It's the confidence. And as he mentions, the starts, well, you know, three of the four games at least, the Jets got maybe two of the four. But the Jets were outplayed off the hop, and the goaltenders kept them in it. And, you know, Hutchinson's, you know, put 40-plus saves last night. So you're looking at if the Jets are able to get goaltending like they did last year, that's a huge step, because I didn't think it was going to be as good as it was last year. And to start off with, you could argue it's already, you know, it's obviously only four games, but it's probably been better.
Yeah, I mean, and that's absolutely, you guys are exactly right. That's where it starts with this team so far. Given how they come out for each and every game sluggishly, they haven't been very good in the first periods in really any of the games, and the goaltending has kept them in it. And that's what you want from goaltenders. Are they going above and beyond the call of duty? Probably a little bit right now, and it's going to regress to some extent.
For sure.
But the Jets
aren't
going to start this poorly for the entire year, I think. So it'll eventually balance itself out to some degree. And if you can continue putting up, you know, with Michael Hutchinson with a .968 save percentage, I know it's two games, but that's all you can go with so far. And Andre Pavlik, a .932 save percentage, but anybody who's quibbling with either of their performances is just looking for something to nitpick about.
Again, so the Hutchinson, so the Jersey game and the Ranger game, I saw parts of the Jersey and the Ranger game. So that's when Hutchinson played. So I'll defer to you guys there anyhow. But I'll tell you this. I was able to work both the Thursday game and the Monday game with Rick. I thought Pavlik was tremendous. And you talk about save percentages. I thought that's deceiving.
Sure. He was better than .932.
He was better than that. I know it's, again, just not a lot of games, but better than that. He was so good, and he made so many big-time saves and kept them in it, and they were not easy saves. I mean, again, I find save percentage, you know, over the long hauls, obviously it's fairly telling, especially at even strength, but it can be deceiving in short periods. And, ooh, I was just very impressed with the way he played.
Well, Pavlik gives up those three goals in Long Island or in Brooklyn. But those three goals, I mean, if it wasn't for Pavlik, it's probably six goals.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, that's how bad the Jets were to start. And he gave them a shot to get back into the game, get within one goal. They weren't able to tie it up.
I mean, you stop Tavares on the first chance. I know he misses the net on the first chance, and then he gets the penalty shot. You get basically two breakaways.
Yeah.
Stops him. Both beautiful glove save on the penalty shot when he gets deked out, and then he raises the puck. So if you're the Jets, you got to be really happy about that. And as he mentioned, kind of that balanced contribution. Guys who hadn't scored chipped in, and I think that's obviously important as well.
Well, I mean, at the start of the year, that's sort of what, you know, I didn't pick the Jets to make the playoffs, and I sort of thought that the goaltending was going to regress from how
you
Andre...
You picked the Sharks, though, Drew.
I did pick the Sharks. Give me a thank you. A little bit of credit. I appreciate it. I thought the goaltending was going to regress a little bit from how Andre Pavlik was at the end of the year. I didn't think he could replicate that. Now, I don't know if he's going to replicate that for the next, you know, 78 games this season, or him and Hutchinson, but... You know, the Jets, the players, the coaching staff, the management, they know that right now, at the start of the year, they have two goaltenders that they can rely on, which is sort of what they had for a large chunk of last year, especially when they got off to the very good start right up until the All-Star break, when afterwards they had a little bit of a lag. So the Jets have to be feeling great about that, Ezzy.
Yeah, and you look at the game as a whole, and I thought the shot totals were a little bit deceiving in the second period. Not to say that the Rangers weren't outplaying the Jets at times, but I thought for the most part of the game, the Jets were skating with the Rangers. And I think, you know, when you look at the Rangers lineup, sure, they've lost some players, notably Carl Hagelin and Marty St. Louis, but it's still a very talented team, especially up the middle with Brassard and Stepan and... Kevin Hayes is a player I know that all of us here really like. it's still a very talented team, and the defense jumping into the play. Dan Boyle was a healthy scratch yesterday, which you don't see very often, or at least you didn't see earlier in his career. You've started to see it a little bit later in his career because he's getting a little bit older. Yeah. But the Rangers are so talented on defense. Keith Yandle really made them that much better. But I thought Mark Stahl, you saw in the third period, he was starting to get frustrated. He was taking penalties. I thought the Jets were using their speed really well. And you got to mention Nikolaj Ehlers' first goal. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, not only did he score his first NHL goal, but he was really influential in setting up that empty netter by Mark Stewart, really hustling. I thought Nikolaj Ehlers on the road has been excellent because he didn't have a very good preseason. I mean, he really was not that impressive. I didn't think he was particularly bad, but I mean, he's been one of the top forwards, and you forget, he's only 19 years old. So I think you got to take your hat off to Nikolaj Ehlers getting his first goal on the road in a game.
Hell of a shot.
It was a heck of a shot, Drew, and he played a very solid game. You know, it's cliche, but he was good at both ends of the ice, and that line to me continues to be the most dangerous line for the Jets. Not the Ladd, Little, Wheeler line. To me, Scheifele, Ehlers, and Perreault, the chemistry that they've put together in the last four games, the first four games of the year, has been really incredible. And that's why Drew Stafford can't get off that third line. I mean, Drew Stafford probably wants to be on one of the top two lines. But right now, I mean, who do you move off of one of those top two lines?
Well, I think, you know, you mentioned Ehlers. I think one thing the biggest thing I notice when I watch him is just the skill is apparent. The natural skill is higher than most players in the team. I don't want to simplify it too much, but that really is what it is. That's the point. He has natural skills. I mean, he's got more natural skill than Scheifele. Scheifele's been very good. But Ehlers' natural skill is, you know, you might even say eventually, obviously, he'll take its strides, but just strict talent, you drop him in on the roster, I mean, he looks like top three already. He'll come into that eventually.
Yeah.
That was my question. He's a top 10 pick. I mean, top 10 picks are supposed to be guys like that, and it's early, obviously, but it's never been a question about his skill. Some people have size and his ability to adjust, but that takes time. But I mean, what you're seeing is that natural ability, and he shoots like that. Ooh, I mean, and he generates chances, and this is one thing. You can have some bumps in the road here with a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers, because he tries things and he makes mistakes and he's fancy at the blue line. Well, you know what? That's the way it goes. You're going to have to give away some on the back end, on the defensive end, and for some of the risks he takes offensively. But when it comes down to it, very few players, you know, only the good players like him challenge themselves and try and make plays like that. So sure. Fans have to be patient.
You don't want to stifle a guy who's that talented and turn him into just any other NHL player. So you take, you know, if there's an occasional wart, you're accepting of that because the rest of the time it's usually exceptional play.
And I think everyone should expect Nikolaj Ehlers to have some growing pains throughout the season.
For sure.
I wouldn't expect him to get a point in all 82 games. But you can't take anything away from the kid. I mean, he's playing unbelievably. Rich nailed it. I mean, his skill is evident, and it was evident when he was with Halifax in the QMJHL. But the way he's playing right now, there's no doubt in anybody's mind that he's going back to junior, and there's no doubt in anybody's mind right now that he shouldn't be on the second line because it's clicking. I mean, 3-1 for the Jets. I mean, sure, you can take exception with too many penalties and some slow starts, but you come home with 6 of 8 points against a couple of playoff teams and a team that didn't miss the playoffs by much in the Boston Bruins, and you'll take that 7 days a week.
Yeah, I don't care even how they did it. If you go on the road to the East Coast, I know you played a couple of bad teams, but you played a couple of good teams, and if you go on the road to the East Coast and you end up 3-1, you're happy. I don't care if you get outshot 80-2. If you win and you get out 3-1 on the road, you're really happy. You're coming back to play a Calgary team, I'm sure we'll talk about a bit later. We're going to talk about with George Johnson and the Calgary Herald. And you're feeling good about yourself.
By the way, I don't say this very often, being a Canadian, but do most people care about hockey right now?
I know, it's true.
You're right.
That baseball game was arguably one of the best baseball games of all time. I mean, sure, in 92 and 93, the Jays winning the World Series, I mean, those were some pretty good games. But since then, I mean, that seventh inning, I mean, a common tweet you were seeing was they're going to make a movie out of that seventh inning one day, right?
Yeah. Well,
it was that good.
That's why I said it was Shakespearean. It was that dramatic. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets and the Flames, the home openers on Friday. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Mm-hmm. 20 minutes past 7 in the evening. Welcome back. NHL this week for Wednesday, the 14th of October. I have confirmation now. TSN 1290 will carry games 2 and 3 of the American League Championship Series. Game 2 this coming Saturday, 3:07 first pitch. You'll hear it here on TSN 1290. And then Monday, October the 19th, Game 3, a 7:07 first pitch. You can hear both of those games live here on TSN 1290.
You know, as long as I've known Richie and as long as I've known Drew, you guys have always been huge Blue Jays fans.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest thing about this Blue Jays run for me is that it creates new baseball fans, yeah, and it brings
sure.
the country together.
Sure.
So whether you're jumping on the bandwagon, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great for the country. It's great for baseball because we all love baseball. Not everybody loves it,
yeah.
but even if you're not a baseball fan, it's tough to not fall in love with this team. Like, if you watch that game tonight,
oh God.
How could you not love the sport?
Yeah, there's no way you couldn't. I mean, Laura, my wife, was at home watching the game, and Laura's a baseball fan. She's not a big Jays fan by any stretch, but she was getting into it. You know, when the call with the Shinsu Chu and the bat and the run in the seventh inning, which caused all the chaos, you know, she was getting fired up, and she was, you know, yelling
for
at
sure.
the umpires. Things were getting a little heated at the Piles Mandel residence, so you know that everybody's fallen in love with this Blue Jays team.
If it would have gone the other way, we would have been complaining more about it, but it doesn't matter.
No.
The Jays are going to the ALCS against the Astros or the Royals.
Yeah.
And
I mean, as much as I think the Astros are the easier of the two of the matchups.
Well, I think the Royals are because they're pitching.
Well, I don't know. The Royals scare me. I mean,
like
you can't kill the Royals. It's been two straight years now that, you know, with the exception of Madison Baumgartner, you can't kill this Kansas City Royals team. And I'm afraid that if they get back to the ALCS, if they beat the Astros today in that Game 5, it'll be another one of those circumstances where they're just
the
a team
pitching.
Of destiny.
They don't have the starting pitching, I don't think.
I know that they don't based on right now how their guys are performing.
And Davis now closing was a great closer, but moves everybody up above.
Sure, then no Greg Hall in there anymore.
I don't think you can stop this team. I think the Jays are the best team in baseball right now. I don't think you can stop them.
Ballpark in Kansas City doesn't suit the Jays. It's
That's
a,
true.
It's definitely a fielder's ballpark, and they
can catch the ball. But I still like the Jays' chances against Simon. Make this a legal curve baseball show.
Well, it works both ways.
We could.
Yeah, you know, this is, I guess, an illegal pitch baseball show. What else could
be
there
an illegal curve, Drew? I mean,
I know, but it can be illegal that it's so nasty that it's illegal.
Let's get Juan Guzman on the line right now.
And his blue glove.
And his blue glove. Well, Stroman, he uses the blue glove.
That's
Price
right.
uses the blue glove.
That's my boy, Stroman. Love him.
Well, he was nails today.
Sharp dresser too, just like you, Drew.
That's me. Yeah, me and Marcus Stroman, we have a lot in common. Anyways.
Ezzy, is it true you might be the iPad guy for the ALCS?
I made that guy my Twitter avatar just because he's eating bacon on a stick, like just
who is
chilling
he?
On his iPad.
He's just I'm sure he's some Fox Sports 1 employee or something.
Okay.
Who, you know, is.
I heard Ezzy's going to go to every Jets game this year for TSN, eating different snacks and sit on his iPad tweeting.
I think that'd be a good role for him, to be perfectly honest.
That guy's my spirit animal.
Okay, you said that. I saw you tweet that earlier when he was eating the bacon on the stick. I saw you tweet that that guy's your spirit animal. I thought that was very, very funny. Okay, Jets Flames Friday night, the home opener at MTS Center. You think the Jets will finally win a home opener?
Well, let's talk about the Flames here for a second.
Okay, lose Lance Boma for 3 months today.
Yeah, I mean that hurts their energy and the kind of depth players. You look at the Flames squad, still trying to find their way a little bit, I think. I mean, dangerous, sure, in that first line with the talent. You saw Gaudreau on the weekend with the overtime goal, and even last night pushing St. Louis and kind of going back and forth there. But yeah, a little of that mojo from last year is gone. You know, the end of the games, not getting the same. You know, I know they won overtime there, but last night, making a push against St. Louis, didn't get that last goal.
That's right. If this was last year, they would have tied up that game.
So a little bit of mojo. They're trying to push back on that. I think Bob Hartley's making sure their confidence isn't hurt by the. I think a team like that who has such a good season last year, You worry if the other shoe will drop just because, again, a lot of the things that they did are not necessarily sustainable. Having said that, from the internal growth and different things that they have, they're young players and they've added in Hamilton and such, you know, I expected them to still be a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
Early, of course. But I think Bob Hartley wants to make sure he has this team in the right mode. And I think they're They got confidence last year from some unexpected success.
Yeah.
And unexpected success in the way that they had that success. I don't just mean winning games. I mean the way they won games. So
dramatically.
So I think he's got to make sure they don't lose confidence from the fact they can't push, because they're not always going to win games when they're down in the last minute.
Well, they're not going to surprise any teams anymore.
True.
If there were teams that were still being surprised by them by the end of the year, but there's no teams should have been aware that that was a better team than people gave him credit for at the start of the season. To start the year, I mean, their problem clearly right now is, you know, goaltending.
Right.
They have three goaltenders on the roster, which is quite unusual in this day and age. They have Hiller and Ramo, and then they have Joni Ordio, who's a well-regarded prospect. Mm-hmm. That if they were to, he's not able to clear, he has to go through waivers. And if they were to try and put him through waivers, somebody would claim him.
So Buffalo.
Buffalo. I mean, pick a team that needs goaltending right now. They would certainly claim him. So they have three goaltenders on their roster. You know, Hiller started two games. He's sub 900 save percentage. You know, Ramo is a 886 save percentage. Ordio hasn't started yet. Maybe we'll see him Friday here in Winnipeg. That's really what they need to figure out. Shore up your goaltending, and then I think everything else will be okay for the Flames.
Guys, the Calgary Flames are not happy with the 1-2 start, but the goaltending was one of the reasons why they were able to get into the playoffs last year, and I wouldn't be too concerned with the goaltending right now. To Richie's point, I think, you know, TJ Brody's not in the lineup right now. He's a key defenseman for them. Mm-hmm. Not to say that they don't have other good defensemen. I mean, after Giordano, you've got Dennis Wiedemann, and you've got Dougie Hamilton and Chris Russell. I mean, it's a very good group of defensemen there. But that's a key injury for them, and that's early on here. But he's a good defensive defenseman. You mentioned the goaltending. It hasn't been good, but it's only three games. But you have to be concerned because every point matters, and that's why the Jets getting 6 of a possible 8 points is huge on the road, especially against Eastern Conference teams. It's important to get those. It's just as important to get wins against non-division teams as it is against divisional teams. I mean, points are points at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty obvious to say that, but this Calgary Flames team still had to fight till the end of the season to make the playoffs. It's not like they coasted into the playoffs like a Nashville, example, or an Anaheim.
Clinched the same day the Jets did.
So they, right, Drew, so this Calgary Flames team is by no means a favorite to make the playoffs. I mean, we picked them to make the playoffs, and I think a lot of people did based on the fact that they added Michael Frolik and they traded for Dougie Hamilton. But I still think when you look at this Jets team, it's a deeper team than the Calgary Flames team. Not to say that the Jets are going to, you know, welcome the Flames into town and thump them 7-1. I'm just saying, when
it's
you look
deeper
at
offensively deeper in goal.
But you look at the playoffs, Richie, and you look at the Ducks, the way the Ducks handled the Flames and the way the Ducks handled the Jets. And I realize the Ducks swept the Jets, but I think the Ducks had an easier time with the Calgary Flames because after you shut down that Hudler, Monahan, Gaudreau line, mm-hmm. I mean, it thins out a little bit, and the Jets are deeper at forward. And I think, you know, on defense,
well,
flip a coin. It's two really good groups of defensemen, especially when Giordano was healthy like he wasn't in the playoffs.
To your point, Ezzy, about the Flames offense, so, I mean, Gaudreau, Monahan, and Hudler have combined for 11 points.
And they look just as good as last year.
They look just as good as last year.
They're moving the puck real well. They're at top speed. They're dangerous. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, fantastic line. The rest of the forward group, they've combined for a grand total of 4 points.
And I think that's partially, Drew, I mean,
you have a lot of money tied up in defense, too.
Well, they do. And then the expectation, though, is Sam Bennett's going to have a real solid season, and he's young. And the expectations, remember, you guys mentioned it last year, expectations for young guys weren't as high, maybe. You're sure, Mike, you know, sure, Sean Monahan's expectations were high, but when the team was not expected to succeed, the player's pressure is not the same. So now Sam Bennett jumps into, and we expect good things from him. Doesn't mean he won't have good things, but the difference is now it's a playoff expectation. It's different when you jump in as a young player with that expectation.
That's right. If they had fallen just short of the playoffs last year, again, there's no pressure on them this year, but they were a second-round playoff team, and nobody, you know, the fan base and everybody else doesn't care that you shouldn't have been there. The fact is you were there, and they expect the same or more.
Now, when you look at their defense, and Brody will come back, and the top line's there, so if they get some secondary contributions and some goaltending, you know, ifs, but not inconceivable ifs by any means, they're certainly difficult. And they did pressure Vancouver. They played better against Vancouver in the Saturday game than they did in the first game. And Vancouver is a team I want to talk about later in the show because
they're surprising.
Well, they are surprising, Drew. And we talked about what they bring to the table and what Jim Benning, who got basically torched by most people this offseason, was trying to do. And you can kind of see it. They've gotten faster. They've gotten a lot faster. And they play a different game than they did last year. And I thought they were awfully impressive last night. So,
Rich, well, if you're the Flames, I wouldn't be too concerned. You lost two of the three games by one goal. The first game against the Canucks, you got torched 5-1. But I wouldn't be too concerned. If you're the LA Kings at 0-3 or you're the Pittsburgh Penguins at 0-3, I'd be a lot more concerned.
And we'll talk about those teams struggling later on in the program. Let's hit the break. When we come back, George Johnson, our good friend from the Calgary Herald, is going to join us. We'll talk about the Flames. I bet you we'll talk about a little bit of Blue Jays with George as well. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Here on TSN 1290, talking the Winnipeg Jets. We're talking a little bit about the Toronto Blue Jays as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson. George, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Anything for you guys.
George, we got to start. I mean, you know, baseball game. Were you watching? Were you into it?
No, what? I didn't watch a pitch. I didn't watch a punch. I didn't watch a controversy. I didn't watch dugouts emptying. I didn't watch any of it. Sorry.
You are a diehard hockey guy.
I'm a diehard soccer guy. So it's baseball, just not my thing. And, hey, so what can I say? Condemn me.
We'll let the Twitter Roddy get after you on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's lovely.
I'm sure that they're always looking for ammunition anyways. They're so reasonable and well-versed with their insults, aren't they?
George is coming home on Friday.
Yeah, true. Yes, I am. Yes, excellent. I wouldn't miss it.
I know. You always manage to make it back here for those Flames-Jets games.
Yeah, everybody wants the New York trips or the L.A. trips, and I want the Winnipeg trips, and everybody looks at me like I should be in a rubber room with a ball and jacks. But that's fine. No, it's great. I love coming home.
That's good. George, obviously, we'll talk about the Flames. You know, 1-2 start to the season.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at it, and it's sort of similar to last year. The top line is clicking like nobody's business, one of the best lines in hockey. You know, the defense is okay. The goaltending's been a real struggle so far, though.
Yeah, and it's kind of the top line has been clicking, and that's because Johnny Gaudreau has been picked up right where he left off last year. It's like, you know, it was just a sort of a seamless transition. He's been wonderful. The other two guys have been fine, but he's the guy who scored, he scored seven goals. He's been on five of them, and he's been on fire every night. He's been their best player. So he's kind of carrying that line right now, and they're waiting for Hudler and Monahan to sort of catch up and join him. And the goaltending, you're absolutely right. The goaltending, they're going back to Ramo again tomorrow night. After a couple of shots with Hiller, after starting Ramo in the opener. And what they need, this team I think needs more than anything else, is for one of these three guys, and I'm throwing Yoni Ordeo in there too, to step up and make a declaration that, you know, they can count on them for not just a couple of weeks, but for a month. And nobody's asking them to be Mika Kiprasov or anything like that, but just somebody that they've got a number one go-to guy, their ace on the mound, their quarterback, their whatever you want to call it, and somebody just pick up the ball and run with it for a while.
You know, George, I think it's interesting that you mentioned the goaltending. Jonas Hiller's got the two starts, as you mentioned, and Kari Ramos started the one game, but they've still got Yoni Ortio on the 23-man roster, and it seems to make everybody uncomfortable because it's not very common in the NHL to do that. How do you see this goaltending situation playing out? Are they going to stick with three goaltenders for at least a couple months here, or is it not going to be that long?
I think that they're waiting for somebody to step up. I think that it's kind of like a chorus line right now. They're auditioning, and the three of them so far have shown that they can be, serviceable, dependable NHL goaltenders. What they need is a frontline number one guy, and none of these three guys yet has really proven that here. Hiller has not proven that here yet. And like I said, last year, one guy would carry them, whether it was Hiller or Ramel, last year would carry them for a couple of weeks, play really, really well, kind of fall off the table a bit. The other guy would come in, he'd play pretty well for a while, then he'd fall off the table. But Bob Hartley has made no secret of the fact, neither has Brad Fillon. I mean, they're uncomfortable with the situation. So I think there's some, I think they're waiting for a declarative statement from one of them before they decide what they're going to do.
George, Michael Frolik, of course, Winnipeg fans are well aware of him leaving to sign with the Flames. Gets a couple of helpers in last night's game against the Blues. It's been early, of course, but how has he fared so far?
Hartley loves him, but of course Hartley would love anybody. It's just kind of the way he is.
He love you?
Well, not really. But
I love you, George.
Thank you. You don't know how warm and fuzzy that makes me feel. Frolik is, you know, he's the type of guy they wanted to get a little bit bigger. He's a versatile guy. I mean, they really like him with Sam Bennett. And Hartley, rather than having lines outside of that number one line, they always talk about putting two guys together and then finding a third. They really like Bennett and Frolik together, and they've looked very, very good. Bennett has no points yet, but he's been the kind of the junior Doug Gilmore that we were kind of expecting, that tenacious centerman, who just never stops. So I think they're happy with Frolik. I mean, they say we're three games into this, but I'm sure they're counting on him for big things this year.
Our guest on NHL this week is George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, discussing the Flames ahead of their visit to Winnipeg on Friday night for the Jets' home opener. George, it was announced earlier today, Lance Boma, broken fibula. Yep. He's out till probably January, give or take. You know, I think, is it safe to say that more of his contributions aren't recorded on the score sheet? How big of a loss is this for the Flames?
Well, again, I mean, it's not like losing one of your top three guys. It's not. But, you know, they have a lot of those interchangeable type parts guys that block shots, that hit people. I mean, he ran into Ryan Reeves twice yesterday, which I wouldn't recommend to anyone, much less someone Lance Boma's size, and, you know, got kind of crumpled and broke his fibula. So, you know, he's one of those guys that they have a lot of those guys. Obviously, they liked him. They re-signed him in the offseason. He's, you know, he's a heart and soul kind of guy. But it's not, again, like, you know, suddenly Johnny Gaudreau went down or Sean Monahan went down or someone like that. So, you know, it's too bad, but he's one of those guys that, you know, they'll plug in and hopefully that they won't drop off.
George, I know it's only been three games here, but Mark Giordano coming off of that terrible season-ending injury,
yep.
Has he got off to a bit of a slow start, in your opinion? Not just the points-wise, but kind of getting back to that form that was really going to see him be at least a Norris Trophy candidate last year.
Oh, yeah. I know. I think there's no question that he's you know, and what hasn't helped him is that, and as you know, as good a defenseman as Dougie Hamilton is, his partner's gone. Brody's gone. And, you know, they kind of counted on each other last season, and he was very, very familiar and comfortable playing with TJ Brody, and he's still out with the hand injury. And so they flipped Dougie Hamilton over there because they like their Chris Russell, Dennis Wideman pairing. I'm not too sure whether Giordano and Hamilton will be staying together once Brody gets back, but he hasn't. You know, it's been a little bit of a struggle, and you forget that, you know, it was a torn bicep, and it's taken him a while. And during the preseason, he, you know, you're going, well, it's only the preseason. He'll get better when the regular season starts, but it really isn't quite there for him yet. However, you know, with the kind of guy he is, I think Bob Hartley, he's the last of his concerns right now.
You mentioned Dougie Hamilton there, and how has he been? The acquisition obviously was well regarded, and really, around the league, people didn't think that the Flames gave up too much considering what they were getting back. What are your thoughts on Dougie Hamilton so far?
Well, I mean, Lordy, he's a fantastic skater. You know, out here at West, we don't see those guys that often live. You know, we didn't see the Bruins very often. I mean, he's a fantastic skater. He joins the rush, so he fits into that mode that they like here of the defenseman, you know, moving up and adding to the offense and all that kind of stuff. Again, it's been a transition for him. I mean, and like I say, you sit there and you say, wow, Dougie Hamilton, Mark Giordano, man, two really good defensemen. This should be seamless. This is a no-brainer. But I never think that kind of thing is quite that simple. They're still trying to get to know each other a little bit, and so you know he's been fine. Has he been electrifying? No, and that's kind of where we're at with Dougie Hamilton right now.
Yeah, George, we talked about it in the segment prior to your coming on, and expectations this year. I mean, it's a funny thing, right? The Flames weren't expected to do anything.
There were none last year.
Yeah, exactly. And even for the rookies, like a guy like Sam Bennett, when you're playing on a contending team, how have the Flames dealt with that pressure? How has Bob Hartley dealt with it?
Well, they said the first thing out of their mouths last year when they had the season-ending press conference after the Corey Perry bundled Ramo and the puck into the net in overtime in Game 5 in Anaheim was, this doesn't matter. This was lovely and this was wonderful, and you know, but it doesn't matter. That's sort of been their mantra all summer long, is that they realize that the Western Conference has only gotten tougher. Dallas has gotten better. You assume Edmonton's gotten better by adding the teenage Moses and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you got to figure that all these teams are going to be better. The Jets are a very good hockey team, as they're showing right now on the road. So, you know, you looked at them and you kind of went, and I think they feel this way too, that they're between a 10th and a 7th place team in the West. That's in or out. And that's kind of what they were last year. For everything that happened to them last year, all those amazing third period comebacks and all the career years and Gaudreau lighting it up and Monahan getting better and the goaltending being serviceable and surviving the Giordano injury, they made the playoffs in Game 81 by 2 points. Mm-hmm. So that's how tough it is. And I don't think they're fooling themselves in that. And I think that's why, even after a 1-2 start, you know, nobody around here is panicking, because they realize it's going to be a long, long slog with ups and downs.
George, we'll let you go on this last question. Last year, the regular season was sort of a redshirt season for Sam Bennett. Had the shoulder surgery after he got injured. Came back for the playoffs. He got into about 12 playoff games, I believe. What are the expectations for him this year? This is truly, really his rookie season this year. What are the expectations for him?
Well, I think they just want to see him improve. I don't think anybody, you know, it's funny because everybody's looked at him and the way he played in the playoffs. Well, the playoffs is a very short sample size. It's done where everybody's going a million miles an hour, and the adrenaline's up, and the hockey's great, and it really fit Sam Bennett. You know, a grinding series against Vancouver, and then a big strong team against. He kind of thrives in that. The way, you know, his old general manager and junior, Doug Gilmore, used to. Now we're in an 82-game season, and Bob Hartley's been really, really adamant about, you know what, we expect Bennett to be better this year. We don't expect him, you know, to light up Times Square on New Year's Eve. We just don't. We expect him to be a good player. He might play a little bit on the wing. We want to get him worked in at center, and we want to let him acclimatize himself to the NHL schedule, to the speed, and to 82 games at this kind of a level against men. So, you know, again, he's one of those guys that you just, having talked to him, having seen him a little bit, you're not really kind of worried about where he's going to go, but it's going to take time. He's still a kid, and he'll tell you that.
George Johnson covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. George, we'll let you get back to the Blue Jays post-game celebration.
Oh, stop it.
Appreciate the time, as always, George. We'll see you on Friday, buddy.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Take care, George.
Okay, bye.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to George Johnson for joining us here on NHL This Week. Of course, George's appearance is brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Richie, I understand you took a shot at me on Monday when you're on the big show.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I came on the air and just took a shot at you. I was throwing a fastball down the middle, like, and Sam Dyson. I don't know if that was a fastball. It was a running fastball to Jose Bautista, and I had to hit it out of the park. So you were the You were the fastball. Izzy was the changeup, and I wasn't sure what to expect.
Fair enough. I didn't hear the context. What was it? I'm not invited to your Thanksgiving Day celebration?
I think it was something about who would be the easiest member of Legal Curve to cut from the celebration.
Oh, okay.
I thought about it for a while, Drew. If you listen to the tape, there's like a 10-second delay of my answer.
Really?
No. That's not true.
Not true at all. That's not true. Okay, well, fair enough.
Well, Drew, if you would come play hockey with us, then we could actually take a shot at you on the ice.
That's true.
But well done, Izzy.
If you don't come and play hockey with us, we have to take a shot at you on the big show or the round table or really whenever we have the opportunity.
Yeah, because Troy, who played, of course, on Friday, mentioned, you know, I think he mentioned your absence.
Did you explain that as because I was being a good father?
No.
Okay.
You know, you mentioned Troy. I got to quickly say Westy, as I like to call him, as he's referred to as, played defense with him, had a great time. I mean, those ice times
made
are
you
great.
Look good there, eh?
Yeah, and it's always good when Rick isn't on because Rick always stones us. So it's great to play with Westy. We had a good goalie on our team, and we ended up playing pretty well. Actually, I was on Rich's team for the first time since we started renting ice a couple of years ago, and it's actually a lot nicer to be dishing Richie the puck and playing with him on the same line than have Richie's stick up near your eyes coming at you. So it was a good time on Friday.
It was a fun time, and, we missed a bit of the Devils game, of course. But
sure, that's okay.
That's why Rick couldn't play.
You're allowed to miss a little bit of the Jets-Devils game in order because you were playing hockey.
That's just good Canadiana.
That's just good Canadiana.
It's good exercise, too.
You're allowed to miss hockey if it's for hockey. Update from the second ALDS Game 5 taking place. 2-0 Houston, bottom of the third in Kansas City. Hustler right now is apoplectic but still confident.
Yeah, I'd be confident. I mean, Houston's bullpen still a little bit sketchy too. So
they blew a 6-2 lead in game four at home.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. The governor of Texas will never live that one down after he tweeted congratulations to the Astros already, and then they ended up blowing the game. Contract signing in the NHL this week. Simon Dupre gets a 5-year deal in Anaheim, $18.5 million contract. This is a guy that was with the Penguins last year. He was traded at the deadline for Ben Lovejoy. What are your thoughts on this contract? A little bit more than $3 million a year on an average annual value.
$3.7 million a year. I like Simon Dupre is a solid player. I mean, he can be physical. Is he the most gifted? No. Is he the best skater in the world? No. And most offensively inclined? No. But, you know, he's a good stay-at-home guy. He's limited, Drew, to probably top out at a 4. But he's going to cost you $3.7 million. He's 24 years old. And it's what? The term 5 years, 24 to 29, I don't think it really scares you off there.
No, buy out a couple of unrestricted free agency years there.
Yeah, I thought the deal was fairly reasonable for both sides. He certainly impressed them, I think, probably exceeded their expectations. I like Ben Lovejoy. Obviously, he's older and is a pending UFA now, so their contract and the ability to retain the player certainly is easier with a guy like Dupre. But I think he kind of fits in. You know, the Ducks can be a bigger team, and he helps with a little bit of the toughness on the back end. If you want to have Vatanen back there, Lindholm. No, Vatanen's a lot smaller than Lindholm. But Fowler, you're going to have some puck movers. I'm not saying Dupre can't move the puck, but he's going to be there for the more physical stay-at-home guy who can complement those players. And he's better than a guy like Clayton Stoner. So I have no issue with the extension there.
Yeah, and I remember we were surprised, Richie, when Ben Lovejoy was traded for Simon Dupre, who was drafted by the Penguins, a late first rounder, and was given all of the opportunity to kind of prove himself as a top four defenseman. And it ended up working out well for the Ducks, who I think, you know, as you mentioned, Lovejoy is a pending UFA, but I think they saw Dupre as more of a third pairing guy, and he's paired up really well with Cam Fowler as kind of the second pair there. And Lindholm has kind of been rotated with other players. Mm-hmm. He's always kind of been the staple of that top pair for the Ducks. He's playing with Bieksa now, but
he's very talented.
I would see that changing quite a bit because I imagine with Bieksa and his age, they probably see him more as a third pairing guy. But needless to say, I mean, the guy earned his contract. And I think for the Penguins, they kind of saw a guy like Derek Pouliot kind of having more potential than Simon Dupre. And he's still relatively young at 21 years old. But you look at this contract and, you know, we saw Brent Seabrook a couple of weeks ago, and then we saw Oscar Klefbom. To me, the Klefbom signing was a little surprising because he really hasn't done much at the NHL level. I mean, Klefbom is a guy who has got a lot of talent, and he's an Edmonton draft pick and all that. But when you look at who the Oilers have, aside from Sakara locked up, you'd say, well, okay, they got Darnell Nurse coming down the pipeline. but he's not in the NHL yet, right?
Yeah.
At least he hasn't established himself at the NHL level. He could end up playing for the Oilers for a significant part of the year.
Yeah.
But for me, this makes sense, Rich, because Dupre, he's 24 years old. And you know what you have.
That's a good point.
As opposed to, you guys know I'm a big Devils fan. Of course, anybody who listens to the show. Same thing with Larson. I mean, I was a little bit surprised they gave Larson 7 years because he hasn't really established himself. Again, you're talking about potential. Dupre, though, proved it, Rich, in the playoffs. I mean, Dupre was a part of that top six D for the Ducks, and he proved himself. Boudreaux likes him. Bob Murray likes him. So they gave him a 5-year deal because they don't want to lose him. They buy up those UFA years. It makes sense.
The upside is high. The upside isn't very high. The downside isn't very low. Like it's you know what you're getting here.
Right.
I mean, the risk is he's a $2 million to $2.5 million defenseman. The upside is he's a $4 to $4.5 million. Like, he's not going to be an eight. He's not going to be a minus defenseman, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, to be honest with you, he is what he is. I think he's more limited than more potential than anything, but I don't have a huge issue with it. I think Ezzie's point is well taken in terms of Klefbom, in terms of Larson. The reason I want to piggyback on that point is because Klefbom is signed by Peter Chiarelli, who really, I mean, as far as you can tell, knows very little about Bodum. Comes over from Boston, comes to the Oilers, doesn't see him play 10 NHL games, tape or not, doesn't see him play 10 NHL games in person. I mean, where's Klefbom going? You give him the big deal. Might turn out to be okay. Just the point of, and same thing with Shiro. I mean, obviously, Chiarelli and Shiro, seasoned guys, both won cups, Shiro with Pittsburgh and Chiarelli with Boston. He comes into New Jersey, and he signs Adam Larson. He didn't see Adam Larson play for his team, in his system, with his coach.
Exactly.
Same thing with Chiarelli, more than 10 games. It seems it just seems very eager.
Not to say that these guys aren't talented defensemen.
Oh, no, they're
both
first-round
picks, by the way, too. Klefbom a little bit later than Larson. But
Klefbom signed a 7-year, $29 million deal.
And you're not giving him $6 million a year, but the point that Rich and I are trying to make here, what's the rush? And when you can only sign your players to a max of 8 years under the current CBA, why are you signing players that you don't necessarily know are ever going to be one or two defensemen? We just don't know that yet. And as we know, defensemen mature. So Klefbom and Larson might not reach their potential for another 4 or 5 years. And by that point, that contract is almost over. So a little bit odd. And I know, Drew, you want to get to how does this impact
on Truba. Can you take
any
lessons out of these players, you know, Klefbom, Larson, Dupre, and apply them to Jacob Truba and his upcoming negotiations?
I think you can say that Truba's been better than both of them. I think it's pretty evident.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, it's a starting point.
Klefbom, 22 years old right now, signed a 4.1 is going to get $4.1 million for the next 7 years. And Truba's been
no trans Truba would sign that deal.
No, of course not. But I mean, are we talking? Is Truba in the $6 million a year range for 7 years or 8 years? Or is he in the
That might be a little bit high. Not to say that he isn't worth it based on how good of a defenseman he is, but I think maybe at this point in his career. Rich, but
if I'm his agent, I'm just signing a short-term deal.
Yeah, to me, with Truba, if we're comparing Klefbom and Dupre and Larson,
Larson is a great comparable. You know, both top
Truba's
10
better
picks.
Than Larson,
right?
And I think he's better in all aspects of the game. I think he's a better skater. I think he's better defensively. Yeah. I think he's better offensively. I think what you have to also consider is that Jacob Truba is behind three other defensemen on the depth chart for the Jets. I mean, even though he might be the most talented, Rich, when you look at ice time with Tyler Myers, Toby Enstrom, Dustin Byfuglien, when you consider the special teams, Truba's buried a little bit, and he's still one of the most dominant defensemen on the team.
He's your most talented defensive defenseman. I agree with that, Izzy. Offensively, there's some guys who have more than him. Can he get to the next level offensively? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. And to Izzy's point, when you have Myers and Byfuglien, I mean, it's a good problem to have. He doesn't get off as many offensive opportunities, power play and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know for sure. And that's kind of what you get into the unknown in the signing here. But Larson's the same way. I mean, does he have it?
I think defensemen, and Richie might have a different opinion on this, but I think defensemen are a little bit trickier coming out of that entry-level deal because of their offensive numbers, and sometimes that's almost too big of a factor in the negotiations, because if you look at Truba's offensive numbers last year, they weren't mind-boggling.
Well,
he didn't have 45 points.
No, last year he had 22 points and 65 games played.
But I think we'd all agree that Truba is an impact player. I mean, he impacts the play almost every time he's on the ice.
Well, to your guys' point, those 22 points are without significant power play time.
Mm-hmm.
Put him in significant power play opportunities. What do those 22 points become over an 82-game season? probably closer to 35 to 40.
Yeah, he's not Drew Doughty, and he's not a guy like that. He's never going to be that.
No.
And that kind of offensive skill. But yeah, certainly could post more points. I mean, for me, the more opportunity he gets, the better his points are, the more money he makes. So if he wants to cash out, doesn't mean he has to. But if he wants to cash out, I sign a short-term deal for him. Sure. See what happens with Bufflin. See what happens with
if
all
Bufflin's
that.
Not here next year, you sign a two-year bridge deal, and then you get more of an opportunity.
Very possibly.
Right. Your points increase, and then you cash in PK Subban style.
Well, I mean, never really that, because his offensive ability isn't that right. high, but you're not going to devalue yourself, really. Right.
And just so fans don't freak out on Richie here, just because
that's
Trouba signs a bridge deal doesn't impact anything, because he'll still be an RFA.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that he's not going to be with the Jets long term. It just means that they want to see how he'll do over the next 2 years so he can make more money. And that's the name of the game.
If
Drew.
Somebody tries to sign him to an offer sheet, the Jets say thank you very much and they match it, and they've got
Drew.
they've got it done.
We talk all about offer sheets, and then Don Sweeney makes the odd decision that he's going to trade Dougie Hamilton for what, trying to get offer sheet equivalent in the trade with Calgary or similar to that. When's the last time we had an offer sheet?
I think O'Reilly.
People need to realize that you can't even offer sheet if you don't have your own picks for the proper compensation. So teams are eliminated immediately. Then you have cap considerations. Mm-hmm. Then you have the compensation that you have to give, not only monetarily, but actually in player comp or draft pick compensation. That is the offer sheet is really not a threat.
Well,
it's only spoken about and written about by people who need something to talk about, right now.
I'll give credit to General Fanager, which is a salary cap tracking website. They have a offer sheet eligibility tracker. It actually shows which teams are eligible to sign guys to offer sheets. And with the exception of pretty much every team that if they wanted to sign a guy for more than $9.1 million a year, there's teams are hit and miss throughout the course of the NHL.
But like Drew said, when it comes to Jacob Trouba or Mark Scheifele, for that matter, the Jets are going to match any offer sheet that is given.
Absolutely.
There won't be one given.
That's also a good reason.
Right.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Mike Colligan is going to join us, talk about the struggles of the Penguins to start the year. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for HockeyWriters.com. You've seen his work on Forbes.com as well. Mike Colligan. Mike, good evening and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Drew. Thanks for having me. Good to be back. I think it's been an exciting day and exciting to start to the hockey season. That's for sure. And quite a bit to talk about, just a couple games in so far.
Absolutely. A couple games in for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they have not started off as well as they would have hoped, 0-3-0 so far. And most people coming into the year would have said that the Penguins' Achilles heel would be on the defensive side of things, but defense not so bad. 8 goals against in the 3 games. Problem is they can't score, only 3 goals for so far. You've watched those games. What's jumped out at you as the problem in terms of offensive on the offensive side of the game for the Penguins?
Yeah, it's funny. While I think definitely on the scoreboard, the offense is not up to snuff or not up to the high-end expectations that I think a lot of people had when the Penguins acquired Phil Kessel in the offseason and added him to a pretty stacked lineup. When you really look at the depth of the Penguins, it's probably one of the better lineups up front that they've had in a few years. Now, the way they were able to do that, though, was by letting some larger salaries for Paul Martin, Christian Ehrhoff. A couple years ago, it was letting Matt Niskanen and Brooks Orpik walk. So they've cleared a lot of those veterans out of the defensive end. They've brought in some young players, and they've improved the forwards in the process. But the problem is, I think it actually still goes back to defense. It starts in the defensive end. It starts with getting out of your own end and breaking the puck out. Even little things as far as their system is concerned, I think they have Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby, the top two centers, playing very deep in the defensive zone below the goal line, and it makes it tough for them to really get up ice and generate the odd man opportunities that we're used to seeing with some of the higher-end talented players. And so it starts in the back end, and then I think it goes and extends all the way up ice and to the point where when you're not scoring at even strength, and then on the power play, they're 0-for-9 this year. That's a big difference. Last year, they started out about 40% to start the year, and we're pumping in goals left and right, and at the same time, we're winning a lot of hockey games. That's obviously not happening so far. And I think it's going to be a tough thing to change. You can't change that roster overnight, so they're going to have to learn to adapt and potentially do some tweaking over the next few games and weeks here.
Mike, you mentioned the system that the Pittsburgh Penguins play, and you had a really good piece for thehockeywriters.com. I'll tweet it out. I read it when you first released it. Can you explain that article and why you believe that the simple system that the Pittsburgh Penguins play could eventually put their head coach on the hot seat?
Yeah, you know, Ezzy, I'll go back a couple years to when Dan Bylsma was in Pittsburgh, and Bylsma was a guy that had a very complicated system. He had face-off plays for every situation. I mean, I remember they had a clip in one of the off-season, you know, behind-the-scenes episodes, and you see Dan Bylsma going over 4-on-4 face-off plays for a specific dot in the neutral zone, and they had multiple variations of it. I'm thinking, I mean, this is out of control how many details they had in the game, and you almost get robotic at that point. You know, there's no creativity, and I think that was a big criticism from some of the players, was they were overthinking. They weren't allowed to go out and play hockey, and so when Mike Johnston came in last season, you could tell right away that was his goal, was to simplify the way the Penguins played. It was to allow the guys to get a little bit more creative, take all of those complex plays and systems out of it. It worked. They won hockey games early on. They got off to a great start last season. And I think what then happened in this age where there's so much video scouting and there's so much intel on other teams, it's very easy to figure that out. And what you saw over the course of the year, I mean, the Penguins had a number of injuries as the season went along, but I just watched teams. They had the Penguins totally figured out. They knew their breakout. They knew their forechecks, and they were just picking them apart, and the Penguins weren't doing a very good job adapting to that. And I think that's really what we see when new head coaches come into the NHL. It's one thing to go through and win some games with gimmicks and things that teams haven't seen. You know, think back to Guy Boucher in the 1-3-1, and he was gone from the NHL how quickly after that. And I think Boucher was a pretty good coach, but it just shows you what happens if you can't adapt almost on a night-to-night basis. It's very tough to have staying power in today's NHL.
Mike, you know, Mike Johnson's security, job security, has been a topic that's been discussed on many sports radio stations, and you know, it's only been a few games here, but maybe when the Pittsburgh Penguins job that came up and he eventually was hired wasn't as sought after then maybe as it would be now, just based on talent. And the fact is, a lot of coaches don't get many opportunities to come back and coach another squad. How long's the rope there? And Jim Rutherford, probably not there long term. Johnson's not, you know, heralded like a guy like Mike Babcock. Do you think he's got more than 20 games, 25 games to turn this around?
I don't even know that I put it that long. To be honest, if it struggles like it is, and you know the situation the Penguins are in, this is a team that doesn't have a 5 to 7 year window. I mean, I really think they're on the downswing of this Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin window, and with the Kessel trade, they've probably got a good solid 2 years to really chase another cup. And so in that sense, can you sit around and really wait for this team to disconnect and disengage? And you see what happens when you get so far behind. I think by Thanksgiving, some of the stats are that maybe 5 or 6 teams in the modern era have come back and made the playoffs if they're out of the playoffs by more than a handful of points by Thanksgiving. And so it shows how critical those fast starts are. And if you get in a hole, it's very tough to dig out of. And so I think, you know, the other thing you have to watch for is this is a team that's really had some frustrating exits and frustrations over the last few years here. And I'm seeing guys like even Sidney Crosby look disengaged at times. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the biggest red flag. It's one thing with systems and plays and everything else that goes into coaching. But when I start to see players like that disengage, that's a concern for me, because Mike Johnston is certainly not an in-your-face John Tortorella type. Some may argue that that's exactly what the Penguins need with some of the confidence and arrogance that I think even Tortorella mentioned at one point a few years ago. But Mike Johnson's not that guy. He's not going to get in guys' faces. He's not going to really come down hard on this team. And you wonder what happens if the players start to quit on him. Does he really have that resume? He's not Mike Babcock. He can't come in there and command the presence and the attention of players as a junior head coach, kind of first time through here, and that's a risk, I think. So we'll see what happens in the next few games here, but they've got a team in Ottawa tomorrow night that I think will be very tough. They're relentless and the perfect type of team that's been giving the Penguins trouble so far, so it's not going to get any easier as far as getting that first win.
You have a few new forwards with Pittsburgh, you know, up front, obviously, Phil Kessel's the name everybody knows. You have Nick Bonino, of course. You added in Matt Cullen, Sergei Plotnikov. In watching the Penguins, I obviously haven't watched them as closely or as much as you have, Mike. I see kind of like an international team almost. You put a bunch of players together, and it seems like there's a lot of deferring to the other. You know, even Crosby and Kessel looking for the other player, trying to make sure that they're included, and there's like a chemistry developing, but it's not natural. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, I think that's a great observation. You know, this is a team that has none of their forward lines coming back from last year and none of the defensive pairs. And so I think that's what you're getting at. And one I've been thinking about lately is you just have so much change that maybe it does take time for these guys to get familiar with each other. And Crosby certainly deferring way too much to Kessel. He did that before Kessel was even on board as far as overpassing and becoming a pass-first mentality type of guy. I think Elliot Friedman even had a quote from an opponent that said, he's so easy to defend because he's always looking for the pass now. And I've been thinking that for the last couple of years. That's a big problem with the Penguins' power play is he's not a threat to shoot the puck. He scored 50 goals before. And yeah, if Sidney Crosby's not shooting the puck and not a threat to defending players, that's a significant problem. And so something they have to work out. And I think when I look at this team, I think also something you were kind of getting at there was, what's the identity of the Pittsburgh Penguins right now? I don't know what it is, if you ask me. And it used to be pretty easy, at least under Dan Bylsma, right or wrong, you knew what the Penguins represented as far as a fast team. They used to at least talk about being tough to play against. I don't know what that answer is for the Penguins right now because they've changed this roster so much from year to year. It's really just a matter of trying to throw some pieces together and hoping it works. So that's something they're going to have to certainly figure out in the first few months of this year as well.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is Mike Colligan as we're discussing the Pittsburgh Penguins and their slow start to the 2015-16 season. Mike, you look at the defense, and we always knew that there were some question marks on defense. Derek Pouliot didn't make the team, got sent down to the minors. Was the team disappointed that he wasn't able to crack the lineup?
They were. I think they were certainly really relying on him to come in there, probably be a top four defenseman to start the year. They had high hopes, and he's put up great offensive numbers in the minor leagues so far, and he just didn't come through in the training camp and exhibition games opportunities that he got. I think one factor was also that the Penguins are right now in a long-term injured reserve situation, and without going into the big details there, with players that have bonus eligibility, you can get into that problem where if you have them up while you're under LTIR, that can lead to the bonus overage and penalty that we've seen some teams getting in the last few years. So I think the Penguins are being careful with that, and if that means keeping Pouliot in the minor leagues for the first month or two and allowing him to kind of regain his confidence and get his game back, I don't think that's a bad thing, but at some point they have to get him up because right now I see guys in Ian Cole and Ben Lovejoy that are really playing over their capabilities. Ian Cole aligned with Chris Letang on the top defensive pair. I mean, a guy that's just not able to handle the top forwards in the National Hockey League. Ben Lovejoy, I think, more of a third-pairing guy that's thrust into a number three or number four role. And so they've got to get those guys slotted appropriately. Pouliot would help, but I think they've almost have to go external and probably pull off a trade in the next 3 to 4 weeks here just to get some help. And it's not going to be a depth guy. It's got to be a significant defenseman because this is a group that right now, 100% healthy, is not really a playoff set of defensemen. And so in order to fix that, I think in especially a tough division, they're going to have to go and find some help elsewhere.
Mike, one of the biggest surprises out of training camp was Daniel Sprong making this team. We've had Grant Saunier on. For those who don't know, he's the GM of the Charlottetown Islanders. Daniel Sprong played for the Charlottetown Islanders last year in the QMJHL. He's 18 years old, tore up the QMJHL. The Penguins take him in the second round after he was originally supposed to go in the first round. How has he looked in the first three games?
You know, fantastic in the preseason, and we see that from time to time when some of these younger guys get an opportunity against lesser talent or at least talent that's not trying as hard. But has not translated, I think, to the regular season. Part of that I chalk up to being on and kind of third and fourth line, limited opportunities, playing with guys that aren't talented. And if you know Sprung's game at all, it's flair, it's offense, it's dangling. I think he could actually do pretty well with Phil Kessel and Sidney Crosby. I don't know that they're going to give him that opportunity, but I just feel like he's one of those players that does very good when he's surrounded with high-end, top-end talent. And I'd like to see – I don't think he'll last beyond the nine-game stint that you got to get as that junior player before the team has to send you back. I don't think he'll last beyond that, but I'd love to see him get that opportunity with some really high-end players to see if he can turn it into something. Now, if there is a hole in his game, and I think this was really his draft profile coming out of – or his scouting report coming out of the draft was – defensive play and back checking and neutral zone play, just nowhere close to ready from an NHL perspective. So from that standpoint, you probably have to put him alongside some more defensively minded players if you're going to trust him in the NHL right now. But like I said, I think the upside is there. He's got an NHL shot already. I mean, really impressive quick release. And that would just be frightening. If you could pair Phil Kessel and Daniel Sprong on kind of both sides of Sidney Crosby, I think he could have some fireworks there. So we'll see if that group finally gets together in the next few games here. But otherwise, I think it's going to be more of a project for Daniel Sprong to just round out that game. You can't be a one-dimensional player in the NHL. You got to be able to do it on both ends of the ice, or at least respectable on both ends of the ice. And so I think there's certainly a future there for Sprong, but maybe another full year or two away until he can really get comfortable from that standpoint.
Mike, final question. You've been at the forefront of the prospective sale of the Penguins. Is there any update in that respect?
There's not, and it's been deathly silent from the Pittsburgh standpoint. Ron Burkle, co-owner, was involved in a pretty high-profile bankruptcy this summer for Relativity Sports. Now, they have a sports agency arm that Burkle has now invested a significant amount of money into, and just over the last few days here. So I have a feeling he's been tied up with that, and that's kind of put the Penguins sale on the back burner. But there's been another issue with that as well, and that when the Penguins got their arena deal about 10 years ago, they got the rights to develop land around the arena. And when you look at so many of these teams right now, whether it's Buffalo and this Harbor Center that they're just opening up, or Los Angeles and the Staples Center area that has now become such a destination for that city and that team, the land development is becoming more and more important to these teams. And there were some disputes around, hey, you know, the city had granted the Penguins that right, those rights, and now the owners are really looking to kind of cash out on that and take a profit. And I think the city wasn't too happy with that. So those are the types of things that can drag on. I don't know if that's just being hashed out behind the scenes here, but it could be something that kind of hangs up a sale. So we'll see what happens. The next real hurdle or deadline, I guess you could say, would be the Board of Governors meeting in December as far as bringing new owners to the table for approval. We'll see if things get moving in the next month or two here, but I don't think it will last too much longer beyond that.
Mike Colligan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. You've also seen his work on Forbes.com. Mike, as always, appreciate your insight into the Penguins, and we'll speak to you again soon, buddy.
Always fun, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Mike.
Cheers, Mike.
Let's head to break. When we come back, do you guys want to hear what Dale Scott, the home plate umpire, had to say about the controversial play?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, we'll bring it to you next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Mike Colligan for joining us to talk about the Penguins. In case you missed him or George Johnson of the Calgary Herald earlier in the show, it'll be available for download on iTunes and, of course, on illegalcurve.com. Mike's appearance on the show was brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Major League Baseball made the home plate umpire Dale Scott available for an interview after the game. Here is his response to obviously the question, the controversy in the top of the seventh inning in regards that led to the Rangers initially taking the lead. Of course, it didn't end up being the winning run as many people had feared. Here's Dale Scott, home plate umpire in today's Jays-Rangers game. "That was my mistake. I was mixing up two rules and I called time, but then it started clicking. I went, wait a minute. There's no intent on the hitter's part. He's in the box. The bat's in the box. So to make sure I'm on the right page, I got everybody together, and that's what we had. If there's no intent, if he, Shin-Soo Choo, is not out of the box, that throw is live. And after talking, the runner would have scored. Even if I had not called timeout, he was on his way, so we scored the run. John Gibbons, of course, questioned that and was questioning what the rule is and where the bat was and where he was and all that stuff. Finally, he said that he wanted to protest the game. Well, again, I got together to make sure that we do have the rule right. I went to a rules review on the headphones, like we're supposed to do, if we have a protest, to double-check when we take a protest and put it in the book, so to speak. That's home plate umpire Dale Scott explaining his decision-making in the top of the seventh inning. Obviously, it won't matter much if the Jays ended up winning the game. But if that had ended up being the winning run, you would have heard about that for weeks and months to come.
How do you judge intent?
Well, I mean, it's very difficult to judge intent. But, I mean, he looks where Shin-Soo Choo is, and he's still in the batter's box. You know, I haven't seen any close-ups that showed me that he wasn't in the batter's box.
He's in the batter's box, but, I mean, conceivably, I don't want to get into it too much because we're a hockey show, but conceivably, if you're in the batter's box and you put your bat over home plate while the catcher's throwing the ball back to the pitcher, you'd still be in the batter's box.
Yeah, I think if you're, Sean Avery in front of Marty Brodeur waving your bat around.
Yeah, but you're not, but you're, I don't know.
I'm not
saying Shin-Soo Choo did it on purpose. I'm just saying that's a lot of gray area in that rule, and it doesn't seem there's a lot of benefit to something like that actually being cashed in.
Yeah, you maybe just get rid of the rule altogether, and it's a dead ball. You know, after the pitch
that's
is thrown,
right.
It's dead.
If you throw it and miss the pitcher, that's different.
Well, but
that's different.
You're saying it has to get past a certain point before it becomes live again. Anyways, our friend who was at the game, this is his response about the atmosphere there. I've been to 2 Super Bowls, a Stanley Cup game, and NBA playoff games, and I've never experienced anything like it. A very emotional seventh inning, he said. Hell of an atmosphere, of course, at SkyDome. I'm going to keep calling it SkyDome because that other company doesn't pay me, so I'll keep calling it SkyDome. Games 2 and 3 going to be on TSN 1290, a reminder, on Saturday, and then again on Monday we'll have both games 2 and 3 of the ALCS here on TSN 1290. Let's go to break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about some of the bad starts for teams that have started this season with winless so far in this early part of the NHL season. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Mm-hmm. 8:30 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to support the Elizabeth Fry Society of Manitoba and to fund their Learn for Life literacy program. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba or to purchase tickets to their 40th anniversary luncheon featuring a keynote address from Rick Frost, CEO of the Winnipeg Foundation, on the topic of sustaining our culture of generosity, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520. Gentlemen, number of teams that had playoff aspirations are off to some pretty poor starts to this 2015-16 season. We spoke about the struggles of the Pittsburgh Penguins with Mike Colligan earlier in the program. Columbus Blue Jackets came into tonight 0-3-0, only scoring 6 goals, 13 goals against so far. Well, they're about to go to 0-4-0 as they're losing 6-3 on home ice to the Ottawa Senators. So goalkeeping, the goals against problem in Columbus continues there. 6 goals against today, and they're going to drop to 0-4-0 to start the season.
Drew, it is early, but you're talking 4 games now mm-hmm. for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and you're talking 3 games for the Penguins and the Kings, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the team that concerns me the most, it might be the Blue Jackets now, after I picked on our season preview show, I picked Todd Richards to win Coach of the Year.
Oh boy! Hopefully, he's coaching by the 30 gamer.
I still really like
coaching minor hockey or something.
I really like the Blue Jackets still, despite their 0-4 start. And the Ottawa Senators are a much improved team. But to me, the team that concerns me the most is the Kings.
Yeah.
And I watched the Kings against the Sharks, and I know Richie's gonna bring this up again, and we got to give you credit, even though it is 1 week into the season, your surprise team this year in the West was the Sharks, but I digress here. The Kings look like they have absolutely no chemistry, and I like the Kings. But you look at them, and a Daryl Sutter team is always going to be a tough team to play against. But, I mean, we're talking about the two-time Stanley Cup champions here, and they've scored 2 goals in 3 games, and they've given up 10. Or no, they've given up 12. So, I mean, they've gotten absolutely shelled twice by the Canucks and the Sharks now. And if I'm Dean Lombardi, I'm looking at my team and I'm saying, the whole problem last year was we got off to such a poor start. It's because we played so much hockey the previous year, Drew. And you look at the way the Kings have come out and you'd think that, you know, they'd come out, especially at home. Mm-hmm. These are home games here.
Yeah, they scored 2 goals in 3 games.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, you got to wonder if they lose 4 or 5 here and they go to 0-5, what do you do? You got to do something, because in this day and age, with how valuable points are with the extra point, mm-hmm. even with the 3-on-3 overtime, you still got the shootout points. I mean, they got to start winning games here. It's got to start with the next game. But to me, the Kings are the most surprising because the way they've lost and how the margin they've lost, and because they started so poorly last year, Drew. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think the Columbus Blue Jackets will get it together. I think the Penguins will get it together. And they happen to be in a weaker conference. But when you look at the Kings and all these teams that are off to good starts in the West, Jets are one of them. I mean, you got to start getting points here.
You want to talk about all the 0-3 teams? List them off.
Sure. The Kings are 0-3-0. They've scored 2 goals and given up 12. The Penguins, they're also 0-3-0. They've scored 3 goals and given up 8. The Blue Jackets are about to drop to 0-4-0. They've scored 9 goals and given up 19, which is a huge amount for a team that relies on goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky. You know, here's some quotes. I want you to get in on the Kings too, Richie.
Okay, sure.
But here's the quotes before the game today of the Blue Jackets. Here's Jarmo Kekalainen, the Blue Jackets general manager. I'm surprised how in just 5 days we've gone from a very confident group to something that's the opposite of that. This is what he said to Aaron Portsline and the Columbus Dispatch. Our confidence, our game, it's off the rails right now. Here's Columbus defenseman Dalton Prout. We're treating this as the most important game of the season. It's a must win. Now, it's ridiculous that you say anything's a must win after 3 games into the year, but that's what he said before tonight's game against the Senators. Here's Scott Hartnell. It's going to be a big effort by everyone tonight. We fooled around enough the first few games. Well, it seems as though the talk is cheap, as they say, and the you know, reality is that they're losing 6-3 to the Ottawa Senators at home. 7-3 now. The Sens just scored again.
Yeah, and something to note here, they've got the Leafs coming up on Friday at home, but then they've got the Hawks on the road, and then they've got the Islanders at home, and then they've got the Wild next week on the road. So after that Leafs game coming up, they have 3 hard games after that. So it's not like the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to have some easy opponents coming up aside from the Leafs. If I'm Todd Richards, I want to get this turned around quickly.
If I'm Todd Richards, I hope I rented and I didn't buy. You're giving up 7 goals at home. That might be a team quitting on a coach right there.
Early, Drew. I mean, it's still 4 games, so and they're built to play a certain style. Their defense is what you have to wonder. I mean, obviously the goaltending is going to be a factor, but they loaded up and paid a lot of money to their offense, right? Kind of like Pittsburgh. Different styles, certainly different styles, but they've paid a lot of money for their forwards, and they've opened the bank accounts and loaded up. You mentioned the Kings, as you know, watching them last night against the Vancouver Canucks, and they were just a step behind. It's very difficult when you're the Los Angeles Kings, even the Bruins before that or whatever it may be, a team that plays a big game, a team that's pretty physical. The game's fast, and it's so hard to keep up when you're trailing. And by that I mean, if you're the Kings, you get a lead, 1-0, 2-0, you play off mistakes, you play big, you take away the neutral zone and all that. But when you're the Kings, they're not the quickest team by any means. I don't care if Drew Doughty and Dustin Brown lost weight or not. And Jonathan Quick needs to be better. That's another factor. But if you're down, then you have to force to create. I mean, you're not the fastest team. It's tough a lot of times in transition. How many guys are going to be breaking away from the other squad? And, I mean, let's be honest here. Look at their defense, and how good is it? Drew Doughty is the best defenseman in the league, in my opinion, but how good is it?
After that, it's not very good.
It's not great.
I mean, Jake Muzzin, your second-best defenseman.
And I'll say this. I had them as a playoff team. I'm not going to change that now. But there are some signs there, signs of life. And, you know, they're third lines and fourth lines. And, you know, you're trying to work in a Shore there and different things. And I'm not saying Stoll needed to still be there just because he was another player who fit that, who fit the style that they play. But I think they need to make some changes here in terms of getting a little younger and a little quicker.
Well, are you re-signing? I mean, Milan Lucic, they acquired him. You figure they're going to sign him to a contract extension. Right now, I'm really questioning. If I'm Lombardi, I'm questioning if I'm re-signing Milan Lucic, who's a UFA at season's end.
You haven't seen enough. Andre Kopitar is the main focus there, Drew, and it's can you get him signed? And apparently they're moving closer towards what insider trading last night said. They're moving closer towards a deal. I expect it to get done. Let him develop some chemistry. I mean, the style of play that you're going to employ, I don't think it changes. Certainly doesn't change overnight. You traded two first-round picks, essentially, because Martin Jones got moved for a first-round pick, so sure. You should have known his market value. Two first-round picks for Milan Lucic. I don't think after a few games here you're gonna jump off that. I think if you traded two first-round picks for Milan Lucic, you're expecting to sign him long-term. But it's that defense hole that concerns me most.
I think Rich makes a really good point about the style of this LA Kings team. You watch this, if you've watched the first three games, and Richie and I clearly have, it's just not the same team. And I don't want to say that the Kings have lost their identity, because I think that's not the case here, but it's not the same team that you're watching clearly. And it's not just the personnel, but when you were watching that 2013 cup-winning team, you were watching a team that was hard to play against, finished their checks, had the D jumping up into the play. Like, they were really hard to play against. You're talking about Dustin Brown. You're talking about Robin Regier. You're talking about Jarrett Stoll, Slava Voynov. All of these guys are gone. Mm-hmm. And sure, there's certain players, core players that remain. Brown is one of them. Brown has really struggled, had his worst regular season in many years last year. Doughty's still there. Kopitar's still there. Jeff Carter's still there. But you're talking about significant players, Richie, that we have seen struggle, and they just don't have the same abilities. And it seems like, as Rich mentioned, they're a different team when they're trailing and they need to kind of play more of a speed skill game. That's not their style. And you mentioned Lucic. I mean, Lucic is a guy that fits into kind of a bruising power forward game, and you can dump the puck in and he works the game along the boards and all that. But this team really seems out of sorts to me. And it's kind of tough to watch, to be honest with you, because the last few years, you know, I mentioned they won the couple of cups in the last 4 years. You'd go into the Staples Center and you'd expect this team to really dominate. Mm-hmm. And you kind of watch them now and they're being dominated in their home rink. It's very weird to see.
They are. And, you know, talk about Drew Doughty's ice time. Well, he's back at 27 and a half yesterday because they have to rely on him. We can talk about everything, and there's still a ton of talent there. They need Jonathan Quick to be top-notch, and they dearly miss Slava Voynov. And he, you know, he caused his own problems. And obviously he's left the league now, and he's back in Russia. But they haven't filled that spot. We've talked about this before. Christian Ehrhoff is not Slava Voynov.
But, Richie, they also miss Robin Regier. They also miss Willie Mitchell. They miss Rob Scuderi.
Yeah.
Right? By the way, I meant to say 2014. They won the cup in 2012 and 2014. Mm-hmm. The Hawks won in 13. But the Kings team here is really in danger of falling out of the playoff race early. And again, I know people are probably going to say it's three games, guys. Come on. But
every game matters.
But what happens if three games turns into six games, turns into eight games, turns into 10 games, and you're 3-7 after 10 games, right?
They've never been a high-scoring team, really, Drew. I mean, you know, but it's their forwards don't really concern me. I look at the group. You know, that's a good forward group. Again, the defense is a concern, and if Jonathan Quick is not playing at a clip, I mean, when Jonathan Quick's going, he's got to play at least, you know, you want him to be, if this team's really going to be challenging, he's got to play, I think, at least a 920 clip or 916 to 920 clip over the course of the year. Now, he's played three games and obviously hasn't started out as well, and certainly against Arizona, he struggled. But what I'm saying is they need him to be good, especially with the poor defense. They need him to be good.
The big boys have got to score. You're talking the guys that get paid the big money, Kopitar, Gabrick, Jeff Carter. I mean, these guys got to start scoring.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that didn't score last year. I think they were 20th in the NHL in goals for.
When
but
they
again,
were good, they didn't score much.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not saying they're bad now, but no. When they were really that good, Yeah. It's defense.
Remember,
and
they didn't that entire season before they got Gabrick at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. All the talk was that they couldn't score. They got Gabrick at the trade deadline.
First time they won the cup, they couldn't score.
Yeah, they're not built on offense.
But they were winning games 3-2 because Quick was so good, right? Quick never let in more than two goals usually.
No, I mean his numbers this year are .861 and.
Three games. But
I know
it's the way you have to force the play too. Once you're not, you know, if you're trying to play a certain style, and another thing is. Their style, they're big, they lean on you, and they're not the fastest squad. But when you're defending in your own zone, I mean, again, Braden McNabb, Christian Ehrhoff.
Yeah.
I see Jeff Schultz is playing. He was on waivers, and Jeff Schultz is on top six defenseman. So yeah. Who's defending?
Well, when they were able to get the puck out of their own zone and grind you down in the offensive zone, their style works a lot better than when you can't get the puck out of your own zone.
This team is a shadow of the team that won the cup a couple years ago.
Right now.
It's to me, like I said before, it's tough to watch because it looks like you're watching a team that's almost 5 years behind in its development. I mean, this is the LA Kings here that have won two cups
in the last
5 years.
I've watched, as he's pointing, I've watched parts of all three of their games, and he's right. It is only three games we'll qualify that, but they do not look anything like the team of the past number of years.
Something worth watching. We'll see what happens with the Los Angeles Kings. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about video review and how it's worked in the first week of the NHL season. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. Of course, reminder, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, 9 a.m. here on this fine station. We'll look back at Friday's Jets home opener, and we'll look forward to Sunday's home game against the St. Louis Blues coming up on Sunday and Friday. So a busy weekend here on TSN.
It's a busy weekend, and we didn't even mention, even though this show is NHL This Week, we got two Moose games. Moose home opener Thursday night.
Yes.
And then another Moose game against the Ontario Reign on Saturday. Dave Minuk's going to be down there. Pete Siamandis, who's covering the Moose for Illegal Curve, is going to be there. And plus, we're going to be going down to Grand Forks to watch UND kick off their season. So,
where do you guys find the time?
It's crazy. Yeah. Three different leagues this weekend.
Are you going to the game tomorrow?
I'm not going to go to the game just because of the fact I'm going to be at three games on the weekend.
Fair enough,
so
yeah, yeah.
Four games in a row. Actually, I could probably pull that off.
You'll be there. We have no doubts whatsoever.
Dave will be there.
Yeah, Dave will be there. So coverage, of course, all on illegalcurve.com. An update from Kansas City. Hustler is now jubilant. The Kansas City Royals lead the Houston Astros 4-2 in that Game 5 of the ALDS. If Kansas City wins, the Jays open the ALCS in Kansas City. If Houston pulls off the comeback, then the ALCS will start on Friday in Toronto.
Us just tweeted, the K is rocking, hashtag take the crown.
Yeah. He's
pumped up.
He might be a little bit of public enemy number one, you know, in Winnipeg if he's cheering for the Royals while everybody else in the city's cheering for the Jays. So there might be a little bit of tension going on, but that's okay. It's all fun and games. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook at bernsteinsdeli.com.
It's great because either the Jays play against Colby Rasmus, can't stand him,
yeah,
or Alex Rios, can't stand him. So be both of them, or really, one of them, excuse me.
I have more animosity towards Colby Rasmus than I do Alex Rios. I mean, Alex Rios, how many years ago has it been since he played for the Jays? He's been to Chicago since then a bunch.
Some of the late coming fans like yourself.
Oh, well, okay, hang on.
I'm joking, Drew. I'm joking. Oh, I knew he was going to take the bait on that one.
Yeah, I was at the ALCS in 93, my good friend.
Yeah, you were 32.
Yeah. You know, I was at the ALCS, so I am not by any stretch of the imagination a late coming Jays fan.
No, you're not. You're not. Absolutely. You've been a loyal one.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, you can tell me I'm not invited to your Thanksgiving dinners. I'm okay with that. Don't criticize my fandom at this point in time. Instant replay in hockey. It's been around for a week now. Your initial thoughts regarding it? You know, anything that you've seen in it that makes you more of a fan of it than you were before when they initially announced it and before you've seen it in action, Richard?
I don't really It's been fine. I don't really see the need for it, to be honest, but it's been fine. I was watching the Leafs game when they had the overturned call and Bernier got high-sticked by, it was a Plekanec, I believe, high-sticked him.
That was in Wednesday.
Opening night.
Yeah.
So I see they're rectifying some issues. I mean, does it make it a little bit longer? Sure, but it makes it right. I realize that all these sports are going to have extreme, you know, or increased replay as time goes on, and I don't have a huge issue with it so far. So I mean, I don't like it in general, but it is what it is, and it's been, I think, applied so far pretty correctly.
Yeah, and Rich, we've had 5 coaches' challenges, and our good friend Frank Saravelli wrote about this for TSN today,
mm-hmm.
or was it yesterday? Today or yesterday?
Yeah.
And the one that was the most controversial was in last night's San Jose-Washington game where you saw the goal disallowed because of what they called goaltender interference. And what the issue was, if you didn't see it, was that Jay Beagle, the point shot came from Dmitry Orlov, and Jay Beagle was in front of the net and stepped into the paint in front of Martin Jones, and they originally didn't call it goalie interference. They allowed the goal. That would have made it 3-1, I believe.
Yeah, it was 3-0 for the Sharks at that point in time. They went on to win 5-0.
Right, and it's the responsibility of the video coach and the assistant coaches to kind of spot that. And I believe it was Johan Hedberg who used to play for them.
Johan Hedberg, who is the Sharks goalie coach,
yep.
And I guess has responsibility for telling a coach to challenge
right.
the player
well,
or not.
And the reason is because the head coach is concentrating on the game, and he doesn't have time to look at video review. He can obviously look at the Jumbotron. But the point being that Jay Beagle didn't really even touch Martin Jones, and they disallowed it, and the reasoning was, Kerry Fraser also wrote about it for
mm-hmm.
TSN.ca, it was because it obstructed the goalie's ability to stop the puck. But I think, Richie, what we're going to run into here is if a player just skates through the crease and goes in front of the goalie, are we going to have a situation like we had in 1999 with Brett Hull, where if anybody skates in the crease, even if they, regardless if they touch the goalie, they're going to disallow a goal? And to me, that's where video review and the coach's challenge works out for one side, obviously, and doesn't work out for the other, and you don't really know what was the right call. I personally don't think that was the right call. I mean, Kerry Fraser thought it was the right call, and we've had Kerry Fraser on the show many times before, and he obviously knows a lot more about officiating than I do. But to me, it seems like, Richie, you'd probably have to come into contact with the goalie for it to really be goalie interference, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I see your point there, Izzy. I mean, there are going to be mistakes. Larry Brooks made an interesting point in the New York Post this weekend that with the ability to challenge, there's two interesting points he made. The first is that there are going to be less timeouts used by the coaches to rest. Rick and I were talking about this. I think it's Monday's game.
No, name drop.
Well, he made a really good point, though. Larry Brooks, not Rick, but yeah. Rick makes good points. In that less timeouts being used because you want to maintain
the ability to challenge.
Exactly. You want to be able to have the ability to challenge. So, I mean, that might result in more goals, another way for the league to try and create more goals.
Mm-hmm.
But the other point he made, which I thought was really interesting as well, was are linesmen going to start allowing close calls because they know there could be reversed if need be?
How often have you ever noticed linesmen really
screwing
I mean,
they
up
did the,
offsides?
Well, they had the Buffalo game where they called it back on the offside.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, I'm talking in general. Like, you've watched hundreds of thousands of hockey games.
Hundreds of thousands?
Well, you know, Richard.
I'd say maybe thousands, not hundreds of thousands.
Okay, fine. Whatever. He's watched a lot of hockey is the point.
I don't think offside should be part of the rule.
Yeah, I mean, it's so bang-bang.
But it is now, right?
Richie, I think Drew's offside right now.
I mean, that's the blatant Matt Duchene against Nashville game 2 years ago, whatever that was, where he's like 20 feet offside and they said the defender brought it back into the zone. Aside from that,
yeah.
I mean, if a guy goes in offside.
So what? A guy goes in offside by.
The goalie still has a chance to stop the puck.
By a millimeter, and then they keep it in the zone for, you know, a minute 20, and the team fails to clear 4 times, then they're going to go back, a minute and a half back.
I will say this. The one thing I like, we're criticizing the league, and I'm, you know, we're being honest with our opinions. Saturday night's game was the Leafs and the Sens.
Yeah.
Daniel Winnick scored on a breakaway goal, backhand. Puck clearly went in the net. The ref didn't see a bad angle.
Blowing the horn.
And the league called in, it appeared, and instead of the players playing for another minute, two, three, possibly having an injury occur,
mm-hmm. Or another goal.
Another goal. That's less of an issue, I think, than the injury. But, yeah, they blew the horn, and then they reviewed it because they already had reviewed it. So, I mean, they blew the horn, and then they reviewed it just, you know, to formalize it. But I like that. That's proactive.
It's saving everybody some
officiating time. Officiating by the league, yeah.
But, guys, how many times are we going to see coaches use their one challenge, right? Because they only get one per game. How many times are we going to see them use it on an offside, especially early in the game? With, like you said, it's going to be such a microscopic difference between onside and offside. I understand the goalie interference. If you're tied or you're behind, depending on what side of the game you're on, you're going to see coaches challenge a goalie interference call or lack of a goalie interference call. But offside, I think it's so close a lot of the time, and especially with the chance that you could lose a timeout, you know what I mean? I agree with Rich. I don't see the offside challenge happening nearly as much as the goalie interference challenge.
Are you surprised that Paul Maurice didn't challenge the puck over glass on Dominic Moore yesterday?
Okay, you want to get me going on that? I hate that penalty more than the trapezoid rule. It should never be.
Puck over glass
can't
be challenged.
It should never be a rule.
Yeah, I believe it can be.
Well, it should have been a penalty, first of all, by the rules.
I'm under the impression that that is not a reviewable play.
Well, no, it's not a reviewable play, actually. That's a good point. But to the delay of game penalty, Drew, which used to be reserved for goalies shooting the puck out, shouldn't exist, in my opinion. And the fact of the matter is that the rule states that even if you do it accidentally, it's still a penalty, which is ludicrous, in my opinion.
They bring it in for a while, and you just become accustomed to it. Yeah, I guess one thing is you're going to have safer fans, I guess, that way, right? Because the people are not firing out of their own zone. But that's not a reviewable play. That's the other beef about the video review is, why not use it to see if there was a tip of a stick? It's a significant play. Could turn something on. Something could turn on that.
Richie, so, if we ever get to the point where we're reviewing delay of game penalties, just shoot me
now. I think the delay of game penalty, firing out of your own zone, is generally not intentional and is an artificial way to increase scoring. But I think many of the things the NHL does is an artificial way to increase scoring when the coaches are trying to keep scoring down as much as possible and keep any creativity out of the game.
Get rid of that rule and get rid of the trapezoid.
And then you're happy?
Trapezoid, I agree also, Ezzy. But we could go on and on about these stupid rules.
Well, that's the problem is that, I mean, you know, the goaltender interference I can live with.
3-on-3 has been great, though.
Yeah.
Well, 3-on-3, everyone knew that was going to be great.
Yeah, it's been better than I thought it was going to be.
Do you think that the coaches, I know we're real up, can the coaches ruin 3-on-3?
Yeah, I mean, I said that the first show of the season, I think, that they will find a way to ruin it. But right now, they haven't. It's been pretty awesome.
Big thank you to Mike Colligan and George Johnson of the Calgary Herald for joining us on NHL This Week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, and Keener Jerseys and Royal Sports. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks very much for listening. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you a good night and good luck.